There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Memphis Tiger Pro Day.
Yeah, that's right. The Tigers had their basketball Pro Day today. Jason Munns over at the Commercial Appeal has a very nice write-up. He also tweeted out the measurables from Pro Day as well. And I think first let's start with the thing that stood out the most to me, and I don't know if it stood out the most to everyone else, but I was today years old, Cobb, when I learned Noah Stansberry is still on the team.
that blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was going down this list and I was like, all right, who's this cat with a 24 and a half inch vertical? Oh, yeah, Noah Stansberry, still on the team. Shout out, Noah.
Yeah, I was, because Cobb and I were talking a little bit during the break, like, I wonder if it's like, you know, because what, it was September when they made the staff changes? Like, I almost just wonder, it's like, is it too late to transfer at that point? And, you know, if you're the Tigers, everybody needs good grades on the team, so I assume that Noah's going to keep that role.
Hey, you know, he's loyal. He's got that Tiger blue running through his veins. I remember when I was covering Tennessee, and the whole Butch Jones regime fell apart.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, half the staff had kids who were walk-ons on the team, and a lot of them stayed. And it's like, all right, well, this is awkward. You know, your dad got fired as part of the regime change, and then, hey, nah, we're students here. We're still rocking with the program.
I think the other things that stood out, Cobb had pointed this out, Dane Danger with a bigger wingspan than Musa Cisse.
Yeah, dude, let's talk about that.
Okay.
7'5 3/4. All right, you know, if Dane Danger had gone to the NBA draft combine this past year, you know where he would have ranked in wingspan with 7'5 3/4?
Probably, what, top 10?
Number 4.
Wow.
He would have been behind Zach Edey, Donovan Klingon, and Nfali Dante. All guys who were really highly regarded. Obviously, he got two lottery picks there in Edey and Klingon. And so, yeah, he would have been 4th ahead of Khalil Ware, ahead of Jesse Edwards, ahead of Alex Saar, who was the number 2 pick in the draft. Now I realize wingspan is only worth so much, but I think it kind of gets to the point that I was trying to make a long time ago whenever they landed Dane Danger, which is that it's lazy, but some people just want to compare him to DJ Burns at NC State because they're like, oh, yeah, you know, he's kind of a chunky big man who looks like he could play offensive tackle in the NBA. Well, DJ Burns does not have a 7'5 3/4 wingspan. Dane Danger does, and the dude just needs to play. He just needs to get minutes. And it's so lazy when people are like, well, you know, he came off the bench at Illinois. Yes, that is factually accurate. But the only reason he didn't produce more at Illinois is because they played a 5-out system that needed to have Coleman Hawkins at the 5. So, I am excited to see what Dane Danger can do for these Tigers.
I think the other thing that stands out, because, you know, this was certainly the media's first opportunity to get a look at the team. You see what Penny was going for with this roster. I think he thinks that a big problem they had last year is the defense took a massive step back. Physically, I think this team is going to look more like how he wants it. Almost every single guy that's going to get significant minutes has a longer wingspan than height. And to me, like, long, improve the athleticism. I do think, in terms of eye test, I think this team's going to look more like what Penny has in mind than the last, certainly last year. Honestly, I'd even make the argument maybe even the year before.
Hey, well, you don't have a pro day unless you got some future pros.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know who that guy is. I don't know who your, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely going to play in the league guy is on this roster. But, like, you have guys who have a chance. Dane Danger, I think, will be one of those guys if he can have a breakout kind of year. So excited to see what he can do. And look at Tyrese Hunter, man. 39 and a half inch on the active vertical or whatever. It's like not the standing vert, but like he is an athlete. So he's listed at just short of 6 feet. But like that guy is not the type of athlete who you typically see in the AAC. And I mean, if you've watched him, you know, I mean, the guy can get up and throw down when he gets out in transition on the break. But he is, as athletic or more athletic than any true guard that Memphis has had under Penny Hardaway. I mean, I'm just running through them in my mind. You know, you start all the way back at the beginning with Alex Lomax and Tyler Harris. Neither one of those guys were freak athletes. And then you just keep on going down the list. Like, they've had some good guards. Kendrick Davis was unbelievable. But you didn't look at Kendrick Davis and say, oh, well, that guy's going to jump through the roof. He's going to go up and dunk on somebody. I mean, Tyrese Hunter can do that, even at 5'11 and 3/4", which is what he measured today.
This is kind of what I'm fascinated by this team, because in the same way that we mentioned at the top of the show, I'm very interested in the Ole Miss-South Carolina game. If it goes against Ole Miss, like, what does that look like? When you look around the rest of the league, to your point, in general, this roster doesn't match up with the rest of the league. This roster is significantly better than what the rest of the league has. But what I worry about with this team is, what happens to this team if that tough non-conference schedule gets the best of them? Because on the one hand, you can sit there and go, hey, if they just weather the storm and they get into conference play and then they can roll through conference play, it's entirely possible that schedule becomes a positive. Much like, what was the Konzo play-in team? What year was that? Was that like 2014?
Yeah, that was 2013-14 at Tennessee. Yeah. Absolutely.
That team, I think, only won 16 ball games in regular season, but they were rewarded for how tough their schedule was because they played everybody.
Right. Yeah, they got in, they squeaked into the first four, and then they made it to the Sweet 16. So if you're Memphis, you're looking at this schedule, and you gotta kind of have a mentality of, hey, we get two chances. What I mean by that is, we get a chance in the non-con in November and December. They aced that test last year. And then if you ace that test, all you have to do is keep it on the rails in the league. They didn't keep it on the rails last year. But you get two chances. You get a chance to build a resume in the non-con. If you fail, if you fall on your face, if you lose to all these good teams that Penny's put on the schedule, you're still not done, because you do have another chance there come AAC play. Now, you got to win the league tournament. That's never easy. But, you know, there's got to be that sort of messaging or mentality that, like, all right, like, we're scheduling tough. Like, we're playing freaking North Carolina 12 days from now. Granted, it's an exhibition, but you got to know that, like, all right, we go out there, we test ourselves early. It doesn't go well. That doesn't mean we're cooked. Like, we still have a chance in the league, and there's no reason why they shouldn't win that league. So, I mean, that's the way you got to break it down. Is it's not a November, December, or bust. We learned that last year, because as great as they were in November and December, they couldn't keep it on the rails. So you got to look at this schedule almost in two different tiers.
Admittedly, hand up, I haven't done my homework, but I kind of know enough about everyone's schedule kind of throughout the year. Does anyone else other than Memphis have the opportunity to be an at-large team from the league?
UAB is going to get some first place votes. You look at some of the preseason publications, and
that's a poor question. Does anyone else have a schedule? Like, to me, it's like, I almost think, like, if it's a multi-big league, it has to be Memphis gets the at-large spot, because they're the only ones that really, I think, have the schedule. Does anyone else have a schedule that's good enough to where they could still be an at-large team?
No, nobody's got a schedule. I mean, you're looking at, you know, some of the other teams only have a couple of power conference opponents on their non-con. So you got to put some hay in the barn there. And then, I mean, let's be real. Like, if you go, well, how many league games do they play in the AAC? Is it
18, I believe.
Yeah, so if you go 16-2 or 17-1, but who other than Memphis has the ability to actually do that? I mean, I know you're a big Andy Kennedy guy, but, like, he's had a best case scenario.
No. What I love about Andy is very good at taking an average roster and making it good. He's not like he's not a miracle worker.
Yeah. So no, I mean, Memphis is really the only team, and I get it. Like, this is part of the reason why everybody wants out of the AAC, because if you go join forces with some of those former Mountain West schools, then you're in a conference that could potentially have 3, 4, 5 at large teams. Like, totally understand that. It's not happening this year. Even if Memphis had jumped, it wasn't going to happen this year. You're in this league, like, this year. It is what it is. And the reality is, North Texas lost a ton of talent. FAU lost Dusty May, lost pretty much everybody who was anybody from that team. And then, so yeah, it's Memphis, and then you got a pretty big drop-off, and then you got UAB, and then kind of everybody else.
Yeah, because that's kind of the other thing. I don't know. I don't think we've talked to you about it. You may have spoken with with Gabe about it. Should basketball be more prioritized in terms of how Memphis makes their decisions about conference realignment?
Did you see this? There was a report, and I'm going to blank on who had it. It may have been one of my colleagues at CBS. The idea that Ed Scott kicked the tires on going to the Pac-12 for football and then going to the Big East for basketball.
Yeah, I can't remember.
How about that?
I can't remember if it was – I feel like it was Marcelo or Ross Dellinger, but I you're right. That was explored. I think it was Ross now that you say it, because I think I remember reading it on the Yahoo. You know, Yahoo's pages have like a descript style.
Yes.
Feel like I remember reading it on that website.
I don't hate it. I mean, nothing's done till it's done, right? So that would make a lot more sense, because then you're not shipping your non-rev sports out to the Western, Pacific time zone all the time. You get in a great basketball league, and then your football team, they're going to have to travel, but traveling across the country 3 or 4 times during the course of a football season is not nearly as ridiculous as traveling across the country 3 times more than that for the other sports, especially when football's the one that's making you the money. I mean, hey, that would be a fantastic scenario in my mind.
I'm not sure if I'm all the way there, but John Martin, for those that don't know, made the case in his column this week. Football's kind of going to be where it is. It's not to say, like, because I think when you read it, people immediately will just read the headline and think, like, well, football is what drives all realignment. Like, you can't just ignore it. Like, the reason why they are where they are is because they did ignore football. That's not really his case. His case would be, basically, at this point, whichever league you wind up in, you're still probably going to be faced with the same football reality, which is you're playing for the spot for the best of the rest. And I think what has clearly been unspoken, but to me, and again, this is one person's opinion, I think they are very much struggling to recruit with AAC on their chest, or the A on their chest, if you will. And I do think getting into that league, it would at least help with recruiting, because there have been more pros that have come out of the Mountain West. And then further, no one loves to make fun of them. The Mountain West is no good, but they're going to wind up getting 6 bids than I do. But I also acknowledge what's true. Like, they're getting bids. And so should you go and sit there and go, we're going to be where we are no matter what in football, let's prioritize, whether it be this Pac-12 or, let's focus on trying to find a better basketball league, because football's going to kind of be a net neutral. Does that make any sense?
Sure. And in the days since Memphis said no initially to the Pac-12, the Pac-12 has added Gonzaga. So it's only gotten more attractive from a basketball standpoint. And that's something you got to consider, because something tells me, Jeffrey, this thing is not over. Something tells me that the reason the Pac-12 is going to get this media rights valuation is because they want to be able to come back to a school like Memphis and say, look, I know we talked about this before and all we had were projections and you weren't cool on making a jump based on projections. Well, here we have some hard and fast numbers that have been given to us by the TV networks that we're going to partner with. Would you reconsider? And if you're Memphis and you've got hard numbers and you see that they're investing in basketball by bringing in Gonzaga, I think those are a couple of factors that could get you back to the table.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing that I've struggled with, and I think this is what is frustrating to fans, it's not like everyone's sitting here going, we should be in the SEC or we should be in the Big Ten. People are not saying that. I think what's frustrating to people is the fact that you sit there and go, that is unquestionably a more competitive and a better league in both football and basketball. Yet here we are, we can't do anything about it, and everyone's sitting there going, I understand why they made this decision. Not everyone, but a overwhelming majority of people, the masses, completely understand what they did. And I think that's also kind of what's disheartening. And I think what has not set well with me and I'm sorry for those that are listening and I'm repeating myself, but I don't know if I've said this to Cobb. What has never sat well with me, and I couldn't quite figure out, it's like, there's something that annoys me and bothers me about this whole thing. And what I keep coming back to is, I feel like Wazoo and Oregon State are completely getting free passes, because in the end, they have essentially done the same thing to everyone else that got done to them. And basically, this could be over. Like, this could be, Memphis could be there if they just sit there and go, I don't know, like, I bet if they would have paid half of the buyout exit fee, I bet this thing's probably pretty close to getting done. And yet here they are. It's like, well, no, that's our money. Like, it's like, are you trying to make a conference or not? Like, if not, that's fine. Like, that's your money. You're entitled to it. Like, you got left at the altar. I get it. Or I don't know if you got left at the altar. You got left after, what, 20-something years of marriage. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and they're finding out real quick that they are not
correct.
That the Pac-12 logo only means so much. That's what Oregon State and Washington State are learning right now. They've got this name, the Pac-12. That's all they have. Because right now they don't even have a conference. Because they do not have 8 full members. And when you look at who's out there for them to select from, the options are horrible. They're horrible. And so Oregon State and Washington State are looking at a situation where they're going to be in a conference that is absolutely no better in any way, shape, or form than the Mountain West would have been. And what they've got to do is somehow come up with a way to get Memphis back to the table. And will Memphis come back to the table? I think you scorned them pretty heavily with the hilarity and the insulting nature of your first offer. So I think you got to come at them with something pretty decent. And I think the one of the best chips right now that the Pac-12 has that they can dangle out there as well, hey, look at Gonzaga. But what the Pac-12 was willing to do with Gonzaga should illustrate, you know, that they are willing to play ball, because they're giving Gonzaga close to a full football share. Gonzaga does not play football. They are valuing basketball that heavily. Now you look at a Memphis program that has a basketball brand that's almost as good as Gonzaga's, maybe not quite based on the last 15 years, but historically, yes. And then a football program that's actually very legitimate. And so if you're willing to sweeten the pot for Gonzaga, which doesn't even play the revenue driving sport, why would you not be willing to do the same thing for Memphis? So I think we're building towards, and I'm not saying we're there yet, not saying that Memphis is ready to have this conversation, but I think we are building towards a scenario where this entire thing can be revisited, cooler heads can prevail, and let's build in a little bit of time for Memphis to actually come back with a rebuttal. Because if you listen to Ed Scott, for whatever reason, I have no idea why, there was some sort of time crunch on this decision. What was the reason for that time crunch? I have no idea. But he makes it sound like they had no time to make a counteroffer. Well, once the Pac-12 gets this media rights valuation done, maybe there's some time for the two sides to actually have a legitimate negotiation.
Yeah, the other thing that I keep coming back to is, I almost wonder if they make a more reasonable and fair offer, do you also have to think like this? I don't know, and nobody knows, you don't know, no one knows what this universe is going to look like even in 2030. I do think it's reasonable to assume whatever the universe is, it's going to be a lot harder for these three separate G5 entities than it would be for one. And I just wonder, at a certain point, do you kind of have to grit your teeth and go, this isn't where we really want to be, but maybe this is kind of like a survival mood.
Yeah, and they can absolutely revisit that in a relatively near future, even if it's not now. It could be in 2026. I mean, I'm sure you saw and talked about this hypothetical 70-team football league.
You bring up, I need to ask you this. What's Jimmy Haslam's end game on that?
Yeah, not sure, but he's got Danny White signing off on it.
Well, yeah, duh. Director. Like, to me, it's like, when everyone's like, because there were people that were trying to plug it, like, Danny White's involved. It's like, yeah, Jimmy Haslam's involved. Therefore, Danny White's going to be involved.
Right, right. Like, hey, buddy, you want your money?
Right,
yeah,
that's AD 101. Like, duh. Like,
But what's interesting is there's division on that even within the SEC, because if you see Greg Sankey's remarks yesterday, he went on that Fox podcast, and he's saying, well, hold on. We don't want to diminish our value as a conference by lowering ourselves to be with these other 60-something schools. So it's like, yeah, you're moving towards this uncertain new era, and there's going to be multiple layers and multiple tiers to it, and you're going to have SEC, Big Ten at the top. And I just don't think Greg Sankey is going to relinquish that. And so if you're Memphis, it's like, all right, do we put in all of our eggs and being in the best of the tier three basket, or do we hang back here in the AAC and kind of look and see if maybe we can't get in that tier two basket with the ACC, with the Big 12? That's kind of where it's at. Is, you know, do you think there's a good enough chance that you could get in the ACC to where you're cool with hanging out in the ACC or the AAC, you know, for the time being?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. I guess I was just very confused. It's like, what's Haslam's angle on this? It's like, was he going to maybe have like an ownership stake? Like, it made no sense to me why Haslam would be involved.
He's bored, man. He's not running Pilot anymore. The Haslams are done with Pilot. And
is he trying to do anything to distract him from giving out the worst contract in sports?
He doesn't have a very good track record. I'll say that. Jimmy Haslam does not have a good track record as a professional sports owner. His era as like the booster for Tennessee football didn't go very well. He's still a prominent booster, and his family are still prominent boosters. But I don't know that I'm signing up for something from a sports perspective that guy is running. So it's just something to keep in mind. Like, yeah, he used to be the CEO of Pilot, and he used to be a big name in the NFL, but that guy doesn't have the best track record.
Have you listened to the No Laying Up, or maybe it was Trap Draw, the No Laying Up Trap Draw podcast on Haslam?
No.
They do like an NFL owner series. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, he's an easy guy to dunk on. I mean,
they're fair to it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't know. That was just bizarre. It's like, what's his angle here? Like, why would you get involved in this? Because if you are an SEC booster and someone that is as prominent at Tennessee, you have to know, like, there's no way that they're signing up for this. The SEC is signing up for this. And Sankey said as much, but like, you knew it was kind of why, like, I didn't want to, like, I wasn't trying to be mean to Memphis people. Like, I get it. You are so beaten down by this whole process. If you see your name in something that looks exciting, I understand that. But it's like, I just never even considered this. I said this back in April when they first reported. It's like, unless it's coming from the Big Ten or the SEC, this is not happening. And it's why I also said the way more fascinating thing is what happens at that meeting in Nashville next week between the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, I guess I ought to figure out which hotel they're going to be at. See if I can't sneak my way in there. Maybe I could do a live report for you from the.
What's the one right next to the bridge? The Bridgestone.
There's an Omni, which is now fairly. Dude, there's a new hotel in Nashville every week.
Yeah,
I mean, it's insane. It's ridiculous. So I don't know. Like, it's interesting because what those guys decide is ultimately going to drive the future of college football. It's going to be driven by the Big Ten and the SEC, and everybody else just has to figure out where they fit, when the chips fall from there. And it's an unpleasant position to be in, but I don't think Memphis is stuck. I don't think Memphis is, well, we said no to the AAC. Well, we're trapped here. I think that's incorrect. I think Memphis is still valued. I think Memphis will still be pursued by the Pac-12. And I think the ACC knows full on good and well that it's going to be a real fortunate to hang on to Florida State and Clemson for more than the next 5 or 6 years. And when that day comes, Memphis will be sitting there, will still be desirable, will still have a chance to move up.
I think it depends. Does the new universe have 60 teams, or does the new universe have like 40 teams? That's where I worry. Now, what I do think is also possible is, okay, you're going to have the big boy, biggest of big boys, you know, the NFL-AFL merger that everyone's always referred to between the Big Ten and the SEC. And then there's going to be like something that's in between, like FCS, G5, maybe like some lower level G5s kind of combined with FCS and create a new thing. And then the best of the rest kind of create their own thing. But I just don't know. I find it hard to believe. I think the other thing Sankey was kind of trying to say is, you think I'm really sharing with 72 teams?
Exactly. Yeah. Why would the SEC diminish itself by lumping itself into a rights package with some of these inferior brands? I mean, that was part of it. But I love the plan. I love the idea. It actually.
No, I agree. I totally agree in the sense that I think it's actually a good idea. It was fun. Like, you know, but like it's not even me commenting on the merit of the idea. It's the, I just don't consider it because it's like a non-starter. Like, this is not happening. So therefore I'm not going to like allow myself to get invested in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But the Haslams, they fancy themselves as dreamers, like the big Jim.
Thought leaders.
The OG Jim Haslam, like, you know, he is invested philanthropically. Like, he put down artificial turf on every high school field in the Knoxville area just because he could, right? Like, they like to get their hands on things that they think are for the greater good. And part of that's image-oriented, and they want to look good. But, you know, think about it. Like, he is the Fred Smith of Knoxville, so to speak. And so, yeah, Tennessee's got a wider range of boosters and stuff, so it's not like he's got to carry that much of the load. But, like, you know, he likes to be out there. He likes to be forward thinking. He wants to be creative, and he wants to try to save college football. Like, I mean, I get it, but yeah, I mean, it's not going to work. But at least somebody's putting out ideas. At least somebody's pushing back against the Death Star being operated by Greg Sankey in the Big Ten.
All right, let's take a quick break.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 99 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. He's on Twitter, on X, at JasonSmith929. Jason, did you know that Noah Stansberry was still on the team?
I did not.
Okay, and so we're not alone.
Yeah, I wasn't. I tell you what, I wasn't holding my breath because I think we all thought he would he'd get on down, you know, dad leaving, you'd leave too. But then, I mean, in a sense to walk on, you know, all that. So there probably wasn't going to be, now I do hear he's fantastic as, you know, one of those scout team guys, but no, I didn't know. And apparently Faraji's son too, I think, is still hanging around. Remember, his son is there as well.
Oh yeah.
Faraji also dispatched or let go, excuse me. And, so, yeah, I think both of those guys hanging around, but in a walk-on capacity. I think part of I want to say I heard in the street, certainly not chalking this up as news, but that part of Stansberry initially deciding to stay, because remember, that was the initial offseason report, was that Stansberry's going to be staying, was that so Noah could finish up. And maybe because he's so close to finishing up and graduating, that's part of the reason for sticking around. I'm sure he could go to any school in the country he wanted to, but they're probably here for the time being, and if he's so close to graduating – may as well go ahead and stick it out, even with, you know, without your dad on the staff. So that's probably has more to do with that than anything else. That'd be my guess.
Raji Phillips ran the second fastest sprint at Pro Day today. All right, Jason, I'm going to put you on the spot. Trivia time. Who do you think had the highest vertical at Pro Day today for Memphis?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's tough, Cobb, because this is a new squad. But I will, it's just the way things are. And the transfer portal under Penny Hardaway, you're going to have a mostly new squad year to year. I'm going to go, though. Let me go because it's right here on the top of my head. I mean, I think Haggerty's a pretty good athlete, but I'm going to say Tyreek Smith. I'm just going to go a random pick because I think he's a pretty darn good athlete. Who had the highest vertical?
Okay, so Tyreek Smith registered at 36, so not bad.
Yeah,
definitely in the mix.
Not great. Yeah, not great. I thought he'd be
Tyrese Hunter at 39.5.
Wow.
I got a theory here. Get with me in the hype chamber here on Tyrese Hunter. I think he might be the best athlete that Memphis has had at guard under Penny Hardaway.
Wow.
I think his shuttle was sub-3 too. Yeah, it was 2.99. That's moving.
Like, Jeremiah Martin, prepared. Alex Lomax, Kendrick Davis. These guys were great players, but not tremendous athletes. I think Tyrese Hunter might be the best athlete that he's had at guard.
I think maybe athletically you'd have to like go to some of those, you know, the Minots and Durans to get to where Tyrese is. And like you said, in terms of guards, I'm not sure you've been there. I wasn't prepared for you to tell me that Tyrese had basically a 40-inch vertical. I'll be honest with you.
It is important to note that it's not the standing It's not, you know, where you have the sticks.
Yeah, vertical jump.
It's not the sticks.
Yeah.
You can now they're letting you run and jump, it's still 40 inches is 40 inches.
I'll take 40 inches from Tyrese all day. And that, the other thing, you know, I knew he was athletic coming over, but had no idea it was that kind of. I mean, that's that kind of quick twitch stuff right there. And obviously, I think they're expecting too, Cobb, and you could speak to this better than me, but they're expecting him to bring a little bit of toughness up front too. Jeffrey had talked about it. You know, part of this whole roster is Penny trying to get his defensive identity back. And so having a guard unlike Quinterly, and I'll be honest with you, you know, even 2 years ago, as good as he was offensively, as good as a leader he was, Kendrick Davis wasn't a guy up top who was just going to get in front of somebody, put a shoulder in him, say, hey, you're going to have to get by me. Listen, Alex Lomax has been that, and I'm not saying Tyrese is going to be at that level, but you're the head of the snake, and maybe PJ will be up there at times as well, but they're going to need Hunter to put a body, you know, on guys. They've got to get more defensive. They've got to get back in the mud on that side. And from everything I've heard, you know, Tyrese is a willing guy when it comes to the defensive end.
Yeah. So he averaged 2 steals a game his freshman year at Iowa State. Now, the defensive production fell off a little bit at Texas, you know, in the last 2 years. But to your point, like, he is a guy who can get into the passing lane and then create a steal. And then he can go up on and yam on somebody on the break. So anyway, I just think that's a fascinating dynamic with the addition that additions that Penny has made there. And it just feels like to me, like, hey, we don't totally know what Tyrese Hunter can do yet. Like, because, you know, he's been a role player at Texas the last couple of years, but this man was the Big 12 freshman of the year at Iowa State. And like, he went after the bag, he went to Texas. Well, I mean, now he's at a point in his career where he just wants to go and produce. So anyway, I've got pretty high expectations for him, but I mean, it's not even clear to me. Maybe you have a better sense. Like, is he the alpha in that backcourt, or is that more going to be like PJ Haggerty's role?
Well, and I'm glad you asked, because it's something John and I discussed on our show today. I think this is one of the, you know, storylines, maybe not, but certainly a dynamic that's going to be worth watching, both, you know, even in the exhibition season because of who you're playing with North Carolina and Alabama. It's how are you going to use both P.J. Haggerty and Tyrese? Both guys are ball dominant. P.J. Haggerty was Mr. Ball Dominant at Tulsa last year. Now, of course, he's doing it and putting up some unbelievable numbers, including the ability to get the free throw lines right up there with Zach Edey and everything else. But you got to remember, that was on a bad Tulsa team that's happy to throw him the ball every time down. And that usage rate was through the roof. However, if you just hand it over to Tyrese Cobb, you know this better than anybody, and you make PJ just an off-the-ball guy, that's taking away what his strengths are. I mean, certainly to some degree. And obviously, he's going to have to continue to develop in terms of an off-ball player. But I just can't see them going completely off-ball here. I think it's going to be a deal where Tyrese is bringing it up. I know we talk about this a lot, and sometimes it gets overplayed. But you're going to have PJ bringing it up, too. And it's going to be a deal where Tyrese is playing off-ball occasionally, because I just think Haggerty is so used to that style and having the ball in his hands. You'd be completely changing what he is if you just decide, you know what, Tyrese, you're going to bring it up every time, a la Kendrick Davis. It's not going to be along those lines. I think it'll be a little bit more split up. But, dude, they, you know, whether it's, you know, alphas, they still need them. And frankly, you know, as you know, we can say offensively, you know, those guys tend to emerge, but they need them on defense too. And if it's, they need, frankly, Tyrese, PJ to both be alphas on the defensive end. And I think you mentioned Tyrese's 2 steals a couple of years ago at Iowa State. I think Haggerty was up there as well in terms of steals in the AAC last year. That's what they need up front. So it's going to be a combination of both guys, I think, on both sides of the court. And I think, frankly, that's the best way in terms of this team and figuring out a way to, you know, finally make this all come together. I think that's the best way to play it with those two, too, is have them both sort of in that role and not just giving it to one over the other.
What's the pass-fail for this non-conference slate in your mind? And I know we don't know because Maui, it kind of depends, but, like, you know, let's assume at least 2 quality games in Maui. In your mind, like, what would be pass-fail?
No, you're right, because last year you would have said Memphis beating an Arkansas and a Michigan and Battle for Atlantis is going to help you in a way that it certainly didn't, so things changed. However, I will say about this field in Maui, clearly, I mean, it's as good as it gets. And so hopefully there won't be the drop-off for the teams that you end up seeing in this thing. I don't know. We were discussing, Jeffrey, I mean, 11-2 is going to be hard to do again. That's what you did last year. That's why everybody felt so good. Even with, you know, how close conference was to start for Memphis last year. I think they won their first four, even though they were all tight. One of them went down to a Javon Quinley, maybe two of them to a Javon Quinley shot. But my point was, because they had handled the non-con so well, and a tough non-conference schedule, 11-2, you're like, oh, they'll be fine. And even when things were slipping up there early and the thing comes apart, they go 11-7 against a much, you know, lighter conference schedule. So it was just vast backwards, as Jeff Calkins would say. But now back to the point in terms of this year, I say you got to go down from 11-2. I mean, you've got, you know, possibly could be facing a defending national champion in there. Maybe, again, a second crack at a North Carolina team that you would have faced in exhibition. I don't know. John's got me. I know they'll start top 10, but I don't have huge hopes for North Carolina. But the point is, this may be more difficult than last season. So, you know, trying to be 11-2 or even maybe 10-3 might be asking quite a bit, especially like last year, you're doing this on the fly. You're figuring out, to Cobb's question, you're figuring out who the alphas are, because we can say it all day long, but until you get in those moments in those games, you don't know when you've got a brand new roster year after year. You're literally only one guy back in Nick Jourdain that you know what to expect from. The rest of them, yeah, you got a pretty good idea of what you saw from them at their previous schools, but you don't know until they get there. And so, again, figuring all that out on the fly against this type of non-conference schedule, that's hard. And so I'd tell you, you know, if it's 9-4, I think Memphis obviously then needing to run the AAC like we all expected, and frankly, like it needs, know it needs to do. But I think 9-4, you know, if you can go 9-4 through this non-conference schedule, I think that's coming out of this thing pretty good. Maybe even an 8-5, but it depends on, you know, you're getting into dangerous territory when you're not going to have any opportunities. There's no more FAU with Dusty May. That was a decent replacement for Houston and Kelvin Sampson. That is gone. No more quad ones for now in the American. So, you know, you only win 8 in non-conference. I think you're stretching pretty thin. I'd say 9-4. That'd be good to see with this schedule.
Jason, we appreciate it. It was nice to get through a segment without having to talk realignment.
Take care, man. Yes, sir.
That is Jason Smith, of course, of the Jason and John Show. I want to remind you that the program is brought to you by our good friends over at Birdies. I've been telling you about it for a while, but it's my favorite spot to go and hang out, play some virtual golf. 3 golf simulators. You can also watch the games on the simulator while you're playing one of 600 courses worldwide. But also make sure you check out their membership options. $100 a month gets you 10 hours on the simulators. Normal rates are about $45 an hour, so that's a fantastic offer there as well. Golf at birdies.com gets you all the information that you need. Also, on Saturday and Sunday, with all the sports early, whether it be Premier League, college football, NFL, everything that's going on, playoff baseball, it makes for a great spot to just go and hang out, watch some games as well. Great TV selection. Also, you can watch your favorite game while you're playing on the simulator as well. Golf at birdies.com. It's located at 493 South Main Street, Suite 101, right there in the heart of the South Main District of downtown. Golf at birdies.com. Make sure you follow them on Instagram at birdies901. When we come back, let's tell your story. We'll do it next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, we might have had Tell Your Story Inception for today's Tell Your Story. So, Brady Cook, Connor Cook was a very different quarterback. Brady Cook was asked about crowd noise and with going to play A&M, as we've learned from EA Sports, the number one most difficult place to play in the entire country. Quote, "The noise at practice is actually louder. They put these big speakers pretty much 2 feet right behind me. You can't hear anything. It's loud. In stadiums, it's loud, but it's kind of like surrounding more distant loud. It's a little different. I think it's just as loud or louder or tougher to communicate at practice." I'll be honest. I watched his answer, and I know they were specifically asking him about A&M and Kyle Field, but like, I don't think that answer is like some insane bulletin board thing, but gotta give Elko credit. This is what coaches do. You gotta find motivation any way you can. It's been interesting that we've had people call out Kyle Field a little bit. I heard their quarterback say today it's louder in practice than it is at Kyle Field. To me, that's a challenge to the 12th man. He was just describing stadiums in general.
Also, if their practices are louder than SEC venues, they might be committing like war crimes at practice, because that's ridiculous.
Those speakers can get loud when they just blare the music.
Louder than Kyle Field?
I didn't think Kyle Field was that loud. Now, granted, the two games I covered were not that close, but the most impressive thing they do is the swaying thing, because it really does feel like the stadium's shaking. But in terms of, like, pure noise, nowhere near the top for me.
Well, I'm on A&M's side, and this only furthers that conviction, because I think the Aggies get it done. You don't
get it done on Kyle Field.
You don't mess with them. Brady Cook throwing shade at the 12th man. Get out of here.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right.
That is, of course, David Cobb. I want to thank Eric Haston and Jason Smith for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.